So I've just finished doing my PhD, and that was thinking about individual characteristics which correlate or might help to predict mental health problems in young people, so adolescents on the autism spectrum. And so the kind of reasoning behind it being that when focus groups are held or individuals on the autism spectrum or their caregivers are consulted, actually the things that they most want help with are kind of all the difficulties that come with autism. So things like mental health problems, so anxiety or ADHD or, I mean, there are lots of different types of anxiety, OCD or behaviour problems. And these are the things which might actually have a really negative impact on someone's day-to-day life. So you can imagine a child on the autism spectrum, if they have kind of really high levels of anxiety, then that's going to really impact on them going to school and making friends and their home life and them being involved in the community. And so better understanding of why these mental health problems are so prevalent in individuals on the autism spectrum, but also can we understand why some people go on to develop these mental health problems and some people don't? Because it's not everyone doesn't have them, and not everyone has the same types of mental health problems. So these are the type of questions that have been asked about people without autism for decades. You know, what causes mental health problems? But I think what's new about the project and what's beginning to come, I think, much more now into the public eye is the understanding that people with autism are much more likely to have these mental health problems, but actually we don't really understand them as well as we should. So that's a very long summary. And then to get into more specifics of it, I guess the work I do was thinking about different areas of brain functioning or different ways of kind of processing information which might place individuals on the autism spectrum at higher risk of developing mental health problems. So the big research group I'm part of, or grant I suppose would be more accurate, has a panel of individuals kind of who advise alongside the grant. So these are, I think it's five parents who all have a son or daughter on the autism spectrum, and then five adults who themselves have a diagnosis. And so throughout the work, kind of, yeah, the beginning, middle, and when we finish the project of work, we meet with them, ask them what they think of things, ask them if this questionnaire is any good, ask them, I'm trying to think. So I was kind of did a separate project, which was designing little cartoons, which were meant to help people understand things that children with autism might find hard. So changes in routine or complicated social situations. And so I went to them and we had a chat about type of things they found difficult, and they gave me some ideas of how to draw out the cartoons, and that was really helpful because a lot of their ideas are just like things I would never think of not being particularly creative or artistic, so that was great. So in that sense, this panel is involved in the research, but then also when for my PhD, people with autism came in and took part in the research. So as I said, it was kind of adolescents, and they all had an established diagnosis, and we asked them to come in, and some of them did some, collected some brain imaging data from them. So what I do is a technique called EEG, which is electroencephalography. I've got that right. I never say the full thing. But basically what it does is record voltage from the scalp surface, and this is thought to correlate to brain activity or be an indicator of brain activity. And so we got them to come in, and very kindly they sat with this kind of weird EEG cap on their head, which some people describe as a bit like having an octopus on your head, but you get used to it. And this is basically just a way of measuring kind of what might be meaningful variations in brain activity, which would help to understand why some people do have mental health problems or the severity of mental health problems. Hard to choose the biggest issue. I'll outline some of the biggest issues, because I don't think I can just choose one. But I think you're right. So I think there is a real lack of understanding as to, or kind of knowledge based around whether, so the type of interventions and treatments we offer for people without autism, say CBT for anxiety, is kind of a fairly standard thing that someone would be offered if they came to clinical services. So what's not really known, although people are starting to research this a bit more, is, will this treatment function just as well in people on the autism spectrum, or do we need to make some amendments to it? So one example would be, in CBT, there's a lot of talk about different emotions and kind of triggers for emotions and things like that. But if you actually struggle to identify your own emotions, then I think the first step needs to be getting kind of more awareness and education about emotions and how to recognize them, how they feel. So that would be kind of a small amendment that needs to be made. But I don't think there's not a massive knowledge base around, and for all the different disorders, as to whether the same treatment is going to be as effective, or if it needs to be changed, or if it's just not the right treatment at all and actually something completely different needs to be used. So I think that's an issue. I think another issue, the one you mentioned, is about measurement. Again, most of the tools used to measure mental health symptoms have been developed in populations of people without autism. And so if you're asking about specific symptoms, so the example that always comes to my mind would be OCD. How do you differentiate between OCD and kind of restrictive, repetitive patterns of behavior that are quite characteristic of autism? Because I think being able to pull those apart, because you might offer different interventions depending on how you decide, are these OCD or are these autism? So I think having more sensitive measures and measures kind of which are specifically developed for people with autism would be really helpful. Because if you can't detect the symptoms in the first place, then you're not going to know who really needs this intervention. So that would be another issue. What would the other things I would say be? Maybe those are the two biggest ones, actually. I think also maybe thinking about, this is kind of related back to the measurement question, is whether mental health problems look the same in people with autism. So do they present themselves in the same way? If someone with autism is feeling very anxious, does it look the same as if someone without autism was feeling very anxious? Just from kind of going to the clinic and from speaking with people sometimes, mainly parents, they say, well, my child on the autism spectrum is very anxious. Sometimes it manifests itself as kind of a big meltdown of frustration and kind of aggressive behaviors. Whereas if you took that at the surface level, that would be almost verging into kind of conduct problems. Whereas if you dug a little deeper and realized that this was being driven by anxiety, then you would offer a completely different intervention. So I think that would be another issue, is thinking about how symptoms might look different in people with autism. So I think sometimes pure science and true science, which is not neat and clean and easily understandable, is very, very hard to communicate to the public. So things like the research that I do, most of it hinges on something being statistically significant. And that doesn't mean it's definitely true. That means that the likelihood of it being untrue is really, really small. That as a concept is quite complicated. And I think especially with younger individuals, is perhaps not going to get people excited about science. If you say, well, this thing that I think is true, the reason I think it's true is because there's a tiny, tiny chance it's not true. Whereas I think if you can involve the arts and make things more accessible and try and get people excited about science and manage to communicate really complicated ideas, that in itself is going to get people more involved. And I do think that there is kind of a public duty to actually get people involved in science and make sure people understand what's good and what's bad science, because if you don't, then you end up with a society of people who can't distinguish kind of good from bad information, which I don't think is a good thing. And also I think it's kind of something that people should be doing, because if you want to get more, especially more young women and girls involved in science, then you have to make a concerted effort to make it seem more appealing, to make it seem more inclusive. So I think things like art is something which could appeal to everyone and can make it seem exciting and interesting in ways that if you just read people a manuscript published in a journal, it's never gonna happen. I never go to an art gallery and look at a piece and there's an answer to what that means. I think it's you go with someone, or someone else has seen it and you have a chat about what that might mean, and you learn something from them and they learn something from you, and it's more just a kind of jumping off point of a topic, and then I guess the real like work and learning takes place from that. That's what the work I've done in the past has really allowed me to chat with the public, but also chat with people on the autism spectrum and kind of learn loads of new things about not just science, but communication and everyday experience that I wouldn't have had, because there wouldn't have been that dialogue without it. So, well, the people who kind of volunteered to be part of our public engagement panel, I would say, I mean, they're not representative of kind of everyone with autism, but they're not just people who come to the clinic because things are really severe. They're people who just want to help out. And then in my day-to-day life, the thing is, when I mention to people what I do with myself and my career, a lot of people will say, oh, I know someone, you know, who had a son or daughter with autism, or I know someone who has recently been diagnosed. And so you do have more informal conversations like that. But otherwise, no, I mainly hang, like, the work I do is spend just a lot of time with other academics. It's a small circle. What was kind of interesting, I mean, not surprising, that people were saying is sometimes it's not the kind of what you would call core symptoms of autism, if you want to call them that, core characteristics, but actually it's the mental health problems that are causing real difficulties. And so if there are ways to ameliorate those or make the kind of decrease the severity of those type of symptoms, then it could make a real difference for people. I think it's improving, but I think, I mean, it used to be that in the kind of diagnostic criteria, for example, with autism and ADHD, if you had a diagnosis of autism, then you were not allowed to give another diagnosis. So you cannot get an additional diagnosis of ADHD. That's now changed. But things like that, I think the mentality might still linger somewhat. And I do think it's the same as what happens in intellectual disability research, that just overshadows all other issues. And there are some people who would argue that, you know, the diagnostic category of autism is too narrow, because people with autism are so different and they have so many additional difficulties that actually we should just widen that category and involve everything in there. But sometimes I think it's not the most helpful way forward, because then, as you say, you just kind of, everything gets lumped with the autism and it doesn't offer as many solutions. Whereas I think if you say, okay, you are suffering from these additional difficulties, give the example of anxiety, we have some pretty good treatments for anxiety. They might need to be tweaked for people with autism, but that is something we could definitely help you with. I don't think it's innate. Because not every person with autism does have mental health problems, and if they do, it's not there for their whole lives. It's the thing. But I think the risk is so much higher, and that's something that's not well understood. And so I agree, I think it's a combination of perhaps something about having autism just means that you're more vulnerable. So I think a lot about brains, because that's what I do for my day job. But perhaps you have a slightly more vulnerable brain, which is just more likely to develop other mental health problems. But I also think you still need the stressor there to kind of trigger. So yes, you could be more vulnerable, but I think there are still things that happen in people's everyday lives which can really trigger kind of mental health symptoms, and without kind of wonder. So things like being bullied or feeling excluded or feeling victimized, or all these things, of course, are going to be risk factors for mental health problems. And so I think it's probably a combination of something about autism, which means the risk is increased, but also I do think it's probably that people with autism are more likely to encounter these stresses, so are more likely to be bullied and are more likely to, I'm trying to remember the research, but kind of big surveys of the population have found that in general, people with autism are more likely to experience stressful life events. So then you think, well, that might be one route by which why the risk for mental health problems is raised. But I think it's not all about environment, and it's not all about kind of brain or genetics or things like that. It is a combination of the two. Kind of the most basic thing I would like to happen is that appreciation that for people on the autism spectrum, the risk for mental health problems is high, and life is quite hard sometimes. And it's not just about the autism, it's kind of all the stuff that comes with it. So that would be kind of a very overarching goal. And then in terms of everyday practice, I think it would be great to see more research, kind of type of things I've just mentioned, actually looking at do people with autism experience more negative or stressful life events? Because if that is the case, and those are one route by which mental health problems are raised or the risk for them is raised, then actually there's something you could do about that right there. Is you could say, okay, well, these stressful life events, we need to make sure that, for example, parents or teachers or clinicians are aware that people with autism or on the autism spectrum might be more likely to experience them. So we need to ask them about them. We need to try and make sure we can minimize the likelihood of that happening, things like bullying, feeling excluded in the workplace or feeling isolated. But then I also think if you, the kind of other hypothesis that something about autism makes you more vulnerable in some intrinsic way that we don't understand, could be kind of neurobiological or genetic risk to developing other mental health problems, then we need to understand the mechanisms of how that works more, because then that might offer some new or different targets for intervention. So I definitely like working in autism research, and I think now doing my PhD has made me realize that if you use what the technical term is cross-sectional data, but basically if you look at people at one point in time, that is a snapshot. And so you can look at how differences in brain activity might correlate with differences in behavior and mental health problems. But in terms of what's causing what and which way around these things go, you can't really tease that apart if you just see someone at one point in time. So what you really need to do, which is a lot more work, but is see them multiple time points and actually look at how certain symptoms are fluctuating or changing over time, and if this can be predicted by changes in brain activity or changes in kind of ways of thinking. So that's what's called a kind of longitudinal design, and that basically brings you a little bit closer to saying something about what's causing what. So the thing is also about analysing that type of data is it's quite complicated. So what I'd like to do is learn how to analyse that type of longitudinal kind of across time data, and hopefully answer some of the questions I'm interested in about autism and brain functioning and links between brain and behaviour a bit better. I think because otherwise you get this amazing grant and you have loads of money, but you might just research completely the wrong thing. And so what I think also research supports this. I mean, talking about research again, but what people with autism or kind of caregivers see as priorities and what academics see as priorities are not the same thing. And I think if you are wanting to do research with a certain population, then you should take their views into consideration. Because otherwise, not only in a way is it unethical, but also it could just be wasted science and wasted effort. Because if that research isn't important to these people, then really, what's the point of doing it in the first place?